16 past noon, it's the agenda. What did you think it was? Oh, I know. I thought so, too. Let's just check the temperature. I want to find out what it is here in town. I'm concerned about there being a chilly temperature. You know me, when I get cold, that's it. I see it's 57 degrees here in News Radio 560 KPQ Country. Good. All right, now we can move on. Consider this. Smart people make better decisions. Smart people make better neighbors. Smart people make better voters. Smart people make better students. Smart people make better teachers, for that matter. Are you smart? I only bring that up because smart people make a better, more informed society, not easily led astray by steam and hyperbole and unsubstantiated nonsense and balderdash and bilge water and baloney. Even if it's of the most pure variety, you can get some high-quality baloney in this world. But don't believe it. Smart people don't. Smart people are sometimes born that way, but more often than not, they become that way as a result of their education. Oh, imagine that. And their environment and their personal spirit. Also, it's a fact that smart people make other people smart, too. After all, there is enough to go around. Oh, yeah, there's room for more smart people. There are ingredients for smartness that are available for those of us in transition from having, like, an okay brain to having a smarty-smarty-had-a-party brain with lots of valuable notions knocking around in our famous brain, sometimes known as the brain pan. So ask yourself, how's your brain pan? Well, perhaps if you listen to our show today, called The Agenda, we can make it smarter. And to help me with that, someone who knows about getting smart, Sue Kane, Northwest Educational Service District. Welcome, Sue. How are you? I don't hear you. Let's try that.
Hello. I'm here.
There you go. I'm smarter than I was a moment ago when I turned on the wrong mic. Now I have the right one on. So how are you?
I'm doing well.
Did you vote?
I did. I voted.
I'm only asking everybody.
Yeah, and that's smart.
Well, thank you. Speaking of smart, what's the educational district doing to make us smarter and to make our children smarter and to give us a STEM education that we deserve?
There's all sorts of really great things going on.
You have all sorts of brochures in front of you. My goodness.
I have this. I brought all this information with me because I can't hold it all in my head anymore. There's so much going on.
I know. I'm that smart, too. Stuff just leaks out. I have so much stuff in my head. Useless information that's in my head. Blocking up perfectly good, useless stuff that I should carry with me.
Isn't that funny?
I have useless information at my fingertips, but what I really need to know is seems to evade me.
It's lyrics to songs and recipes.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
More lyrics than recipes for me, but maybe the other way for you.
So we have a couple of really cool events coming up for educators and people who just want to get smart. But one of the things that we've been doing as a community is holding weekly science seminars for the research scientists of all ages and all disciplines for the last year. And this year, the ESD is supporting this effort by offering educators clock hours, STEM clock hours, which are professional learning credits for educators, to attend these science seminars and hear from the scientists who are doing the work about the work that they're doing in our region.
What kind of scientists do we get to listen to?
Well, we've had everything from geology to computer science to molecular biology, and there's a couple coming up that we're bringing in some collaborators of some of the research that's happening locally. Tomorrow, Dr. John Rawl, who does research in opioids and pharmaceutical science for WSU, he's going to come over and talk to us a little bit about the rural medicine program and the efforts that WSU has been doing.
That's going to be interesting. I know we have an opioid problem.
We do.
But if you've ever had surgery, you know there's no other solution.
Well, I mean, it's interesting.
And I'm waiting for another solution.
Yeah. You know, it's in an environment like that where it's really controlled. It's not – I think the intentions are really well done, but they're finding now that – you know, sending people home with these drugs where, it's a little bit easy. It's a little bit less controlled. And, I always intend to be the best patient and follow the doctor's instructions, you know, explicitly.
Two a day or as needed.
And then life gets in the way and you, forget and you think, you know, even a well-intended person says, did I take that? Did I not take that? You know, you have this fear of, do I need to stay on top of the pain? You know, there's all these other things that can interfere.
And there's another side to this. Of course, we could talk about opioids all day long.
Mm-hmm.
But pain is not merely an inconvenience. It's a symptom.
Yeah.
And so you can ignore that symptom at your own peril, but it's going to make you more anxious. It's going to create a situation where you're healing slower. You're going to have an increase of white blood count. There's a lot of bad things that happen when you're in pain. And most of all, you make bad decisions.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really can argue both sides of this argument. I've had a couple surgeries where I had a lot of opioids. And it's an insidious bargain that you make.
Mm-hmm.
But the pain is pretty damn real. Now, some people, like my father, just never felt pain. He was just one of these people. He had pain, but it never bothered him.
Yeah.
Well, I did not get that signal from my father. I'm a baby for pain. I don't want it. It bothers me. So I'm very interested in this guy's conclusion.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Dr. Roll. Dr. Roll.
Where's he coming from?
He's coming from WSU. So he is actually the vice president of the health science research program that's happening in a variety of disciplines. His specialty has been in psychiatry and in some of the pharmacopsychiatry efforts. So he'll tell us a little bit about...
Psychiatrists dispense a lot of drugs these days.
Well, and it turns out that a lot of pain... can be managed psychosomatically, you know,
wow,
with different types of treatment regimens. So I'm interested as well to hear what he has.
In fact, I had a psychiatrist tell me, if you could change your mood, you're wrongly arrived at, you've arrived at a mood, and it happens maybe every day. It's a result of your bad body chemistry. Would you change that chemistry if it would change your mood? Would you do it? And that's why there's so many psychopharmacal solutions to depression, anger, all the maladies of the mind. They can be balanced with a chemical correction.
Sure, that's really interesting. You're right.
It's like the challenge is there to find the right mix, it seems like, because mm-hmm. there's so many drugs for the brain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he's also going to tell us a little bit about that WSU Health Sciences is doing a whole lot to support rural medicine and different challenges. Something that might not readily occur to folks is to understand that when we have a couple different rural medical systems, something like opioid abuse can happen more readily because you might go to a physician that's on this system and then in this community go to a different physician, and there's maybe your medical record doesn't follow you from one place to another. And so there's some issues with being able to follow up with people and really kind of find treatment for folks that really they're in need of treatment, because if we don't reach out to those folks, then there's a likelihood of, you know, negative consequences, sometimes overdoses, sometimes...
Or the other side. I broke my clavicle one day here in Wenatchee Town, and it didn't show up in the x-ray, but it did show up in the MRI. Anyway, so I show up at the hospital, and my doctor's out of town, and I have a broken clavicle, but I don't know it. And because it doesn't show up in the x-ray, they were not going to treat me. Not going to treat me. They were going to send me home. And the nurse looked at me and said, "What do you want me to do?" And I said, "Treat my pain." And as a result of this fall, she finally did. But the point was, they were going to send me home with a broken shoulder with no medicine rather than give medicine to somebody who might have been malingering or creating a situation where they were eligible for medicine but not really in need of it.
Sure. It's interesting because I'm sure there's a little bit of suspicion that happens now, because you just never know if that's the person that has been to three clinics with symptoms that maybe aren't real. If they didn't see it on the x-ray, in that nurse's defense too, she's like, she can't treat you for something she doesn't see.
She finally woke up.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I made my case.
It's interesting. It's really important for people to advocate for their health. And that's maybe a different story, I suppose.
Well, no, it's the same story. I didn't feel badly about it. I knew what was happening, but I was saying, okay, you have an opioid problem. Right now I have a pain problem, so we're going to have to find a compromise here somewhere.
It's really true.
Yeah
it's really true. So,
well, I think this guy should have a big audience, don't you?
I mean, especially
if he's got anything that approaches being an answer to the problem.
Yeah, and it's interesting because... You know, our science community is diverse, and some of these folks have backgrounds in molecular biology or computers or, I mentioned we've got some earth scientists that come. But I like that you started this hour with a conversation about smart communities. And smart communities come together around the research, and they ask thoughtful questions, and they learn from each other. And it's been amazing to me. I have a biology background where I I've lit up with new ideas in hearing a talk that is so far out of my field, but it brings new ideas, and you get to go on the journey with this scientist as they're kind of unpacking their
thoughts. So you studied biology and then got into the education game? Is that what happened?
I did, yeah.
How did you make that right turn or left turn or whichever it was?
You know, our trajectories are never linear these days.
No, they're not.
It's not a ladder. It's a jungle gym is something that Dr. Noel Schultz said at one of the seminars last year. It resonated with me because I studied infectious disease and intended to go into vaccine development. And
wow, you're going to be a researcher.
I was a researcher. I spent several years in pharmaceutical research and vaccine R&D, and then ended up in education and realizing.
Wait a minute. How do you do R&D and just end up in education? How did that happen?
Oh, my gosh. Well, the science community is much more porous. It's, you know, there are scientists that are teaching, and there are teachers who are active in research. This is something that is not mutually exclusive.
I can see that. The community is tied together at the university or at the educational level.
Yeah. So we've been doing undergraduate research at Wenatchee Valley College. I've been working with a collaborator there. He's been here on your show, Steve Stefanides, for the better part of 6-7 years now. So we continue to do research.
So between you two, you can get a lecturing scientist when you need one because you know where to call.
We do have an incredible community, and it's really neat to see the embrace that this community has. If you were in a college town, this would not be an uncommon thing to have a seminar series. To have it without that four-year college presence is really remarkable. But I think it's a signature of those smart communities, you know, being able to come together, as I said, around the scientific ideas.
Do you act as the catalyst, the educational service district? Do you do the booking? Do you do the organizing and the promotion and everything?
You know, there's a crew of us who have really come together to put this together. So I do some of the follow-up and put out a lot of the raise awareness about who's coming and that kind of thing. But Jim McPherson, who's the center director for the WSU Tree Fruit Research Extension, Lauren Hanas, who's over at the USDA labs, Kate Evans, another WSU scientist, some of our WVC friends. And, you know, we've had a lot of support from folks like Steve Maher and the Our Valley, Our Future to be able to.
He's into everything.
He's into everything. That's true.
He knows everything. He knows everyone.
He does. Yeah, he gets a lot of surface area, I guess. But you know, there have been a handful of folks that have really they believe it, when you bring people together, new ideas emerge.
Yes.
And so there's a lot of opportunity when research scientists get together to bring new resources into the area. There's potential for economic development. There's potential for innovation. It's all very exciting.
And I've learned here on this show that research scientists exist sort of in their own labs or in their own place, and it's hard to get them out of the house or to meet with other scientists that share their skills and their interests.
It's a really important thing, actually, in the development of a scientist, being able to communicate about your work and what you're doing. And when we engage in something like this, it's cross-disciplinary, so it's interesting to see You're speaking to a room full of scientists. I mean, many of these people have a PhD, but maybe their discipline is different than yours. So you're explaining it at a level that has to be scientifically competent, but also approachable from somebody that doesn't have the same jargon or base link.
You have to bring
knowledge.
Some of these scientists in. Can you do that?
We do bring some of these scientists. So John Roll is coming in from WSU. The other one that I was going to tell you about today, mm-hmm. In 2 weeks on the 14th, we have one of the EPA star fellows, Dr. Juan V. Romero. He's at UC Berkeley. He's got family here in Wenatchee and is coming into town to do a seminar on, he does some monitoring for a chemical, PFAS is poly and perfluoral alkyl. No, I don't see the S. I didn't put it in the notes in front of me here, but it's a...
What's it do?
Perfluorinated compounds. These are chemicals that it's a waste product that can get into the drinking water and is being monitored nationally. It's being monitored here in Washington. And he's going to tell us a little bit about the metrics that they use or the measurements that they use to monitor drinking water and some of the efforts that they use for remediation if it's found.
Because apparently our bodies and our food and our environment are full of tiny little microscopic pieces of plastic that we've managed to
This is true. Yep.
Erode over this over the years.
It's bioaccumulation. So the idea that, you know, you eat other living substances who have also taken up right. nutrients from the environment. So the higher up on the food chain you are, and we are pretty high up.
The more of all the other things you eat.
You've eaten all of those things, and they've accumulated a little bit. So, depending on what your diet is like, you can really accumulate.
So getting smarter is frightening, is what you're saying, Susan.
Well, no. I think, the more informed you are.
We're full of plastic. Yeah. She said so. We're full of plastic.
You do find out what's out there, I suppose. But the more we know about it, the more we can do, to make sure that our drinking
water awareness
is
everything.
Yeah. Yep.
Sue Kane is our guest. She's with the Northwest Educational Service District. And we'll be back to discuss other plans that she has to make you and maybe even myself a little smarter right after these words. News Radio 560 KPQ is 1232.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com. The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
At 12:35, you're listening to The Agenda. That's the name of the show every day, 12:15 to 1 o'clock. Special guest today is Sue Kane from the Northwest Educational Services District. And you think we'd be talking about education, but we're going to be talking about lectures and opioid crisis and reclaiming the shape of your DNA by letting it redo itself. Fascinating stuff. What's next on your calendar? What else do you have there in front of you, Sue?
There are a few things up here as well.
she pointed to her head.
A few mental notes, I suppose. The Educational Service District is doing a ton of really neat stuff. And
would you describe what that district is and why it seems separate from the school system?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and that's something that I have gotten really used to doing. Most people are not quite sure what
that exactly means. Do you guys do? Right. Is it a library?
It's something like that, yeah. Yes. No. There are 29 school districts in North Central Washington in Chelan, Douglas, Grant, and Okanagan. And the ESD, the Educational Service District, supports those school districts in very different ways. Depending on the size of the district, they might need help and support with some of the business services of a school district, like bookkeeping or human resources. They might need technical support, like we have an entire team of technicians that support network issues and device and different types of data management systems and that sort of thing. All of the report cards of when they used to get a printed report card, they all used to be printed right there at the ESD, but most of them are electronic now. And then there's a team of folks that do professional learning and support for teachers to continue their education. As the state implements new educational measures, it's important to be able to coordinate and have that roll out equitably across all of the North Central Washington region.
Can a teacher call you as an individual, or does the school have to represent that teacher's needs?
Nope, they both do. Sometimes it's a district reaching out, and sometimes it's an individual teacher who's reaching out to say, I want to try to do more computer science in my classroom, and can you help me find some resources? Or I'd like to try to learn a little bit more about this science concept so I can work it into my curriculum, and that happens almost every day.
So you support them, but also you lead them to new places.
We do. We support them. And then, I'm always trying to, I'm a big believer that connection is really important. Regional connection and relevance helps kids persist in education. It makes them, it builds their identity. It helps them, a student should be able to say, hey, I grew up in Wenatchee, Washington. It's important for them to know about our major economic development efforts, between agriculture and energies and technology. And I want them to be able to know about some of the jobs locally, maybe not just the job that mom or dad had, but some of the other things locally and maybe even have some connections to some local professionals that...
Sure, the person wants to be an MBA, but they don't want to move.
You don't
have to live in New York to be an MBA.
You can't aspire to be things that you don't know. And we don't talk enough in a community, in our own community, about the different types of jobs that there are here. And so, you know, we used to do these things like take your children to work days. We don't see that happening anymore. And kids don't know. You ask a student who is gifted, really gifted in, maybe math or science, what they want to be. And you'll hear things like medicine because everybody's had that experience. It's common.
Right.
You go to the doctor, you know what a doctor does. You know what a nurse does. Maybe you know what a rad tech does if you've had a broken clavicle. But you don't necessarily know what kinds of computer engineers are here locally, and there are many. You don't necessarily know what kinds of hydraulic engineers are working at the dam to make repairs, that profession is really well paid. There's even great mystery around the Bitcoin miners and some of the other, blockchain technology companies that are coming to town. Yeah.
And I think the municipalities are beginning to make a mistake. They're saying we can't afford to have all the Bitcoin operators in town, so none of that.
Yeah.
No
That's
more
an entirely
of that.
Different show. We can't even go there.
But at the same time, they're saying no to blockchain technology, and you should be saying a lot more of that because it's going to be used long after Bitcoins are an asterisk on the financial front back page.
That's really true. Yeah.
Blockchain technology is going to be used for a lot of the different access to mega data.
And our youth need to be well connected to their community, and they need to know people who do these things. And what, you know, when you make an informed decision about what you want to study in school, you should have some ideas about what you want to do with that education. And so a lot of the work that we're doing in support of school districts is to make those pathways real for educators so that they can make them real for students as well.
We're finding, I'm hearing in this room with people that I interview who are watching the economic land change under our gaze from month to month, that there are still a number of jobs that with the average population here in Wenatchee, here in the county, are not able to fill. Do you find that that's the case, and the kids that are in school right now are going to be able to fill those jobs instead of waiting for someone to come from outside?
You know, it's an interesting question because there is an economic, there's a shortage of workers in almost every economic sector. If we were talking healthcare, they would tell you about a nursing shortage. In education, we talk about a teacher shortage. In Grant County, the manufacturers, they desperately need industrial technicians and operators to be able to manufacture things. The unemployment rate is so low right now that there is a shortage for workers in every field.
Wow. I didn't realize that.
It's a good, it's when the economy is strong and people are at work, the the unemployment is so low that we need workers. And so just depending on who is speaking loudest, that's who you hear about. But there are also opportunities for, especially when we talk about like the disruptive technology like blockchain, there's opportunities for our kids to be entrepreneurial. We live in a place that is energy abundant, and the world is theirs if they want to make those connections and be creators in that space.
What's it like for the graduation rate in the county that you serve? Are the kids from high school going to college, and are they studying what they want?
You know, as a state, we're at like a 80% graduation rate, our region is not any, we're right there.
Statewide is about 80%?
Yeah. The Wenatchee School District just brought theirs up to, I think, 91%. I just saw a press release about that.
Not bad.
6 months ago. Yeah, and we have great schools. We really do have some incredible educational leaders, some visionaries that are making things happen with resources that are, sometimes limited. So, most times limited.
Well, in fact, I saw this happen in my home state of California, which used to be the number one educated state in the nation when I was going through school, and through budget cuts and the expense of educating, it's down in the 30s now, and there are districts now that used to be number one that are no longer number one, and it looks to be, from the outside looking in, like they'll never reclaim that position again because of the whole system is eroded to the point where it's a shadow of its former self.
You know, I heard something recently that really kind of put some things in perspective, because it seems like it's election days and we're talking about stuff. These types of things. Love. But every year we talk about funding and where we're putting funding. And in Washington State, it's 52% of our tax dollars go into public education, K-12.
The only state in the nation with a mandate from the Supreme Court to fund education equally.
It is actually not necessarily true. That McCleary decision rolled out here, but I remember when we were in the midst of that having a conversation with a guy from Massachusetts who was saying, oh, yeah, I remember when we tried to not fully fund basic education, and that didn't – he was several years out from it at the time that we were in the middle of that McCleary decision.
So they tried the cost-cutting thing in Massachusetts too.
And it doesn't work. You know, that's your workforce. That's one of the best conversations that I had where I learned the most about it was for every dollar that you save in that K-12 education system, you end up paying for it later on in other services. It doesn't save you anything. It's like, you know, putting equity into your home type of thing. There's costs that come when kids don't have great grounding in education.
Terrible costs in terms of crime, imprisonment.
Right.
The weight of an individual who's lost their way on society and the systems that are there to catch them.
Poor healthcare decisions, poor fiscal decisions.
Yeah, once you decided being dumb is really cool, you will start to make terrible decisions.
You don't, you know, education is, and public education, and making sure that it's equitably accessible is a really savvy investment. It's more than just workforce, it's economic investment.
And from county to county, you can see the difference, and the results are pretty amazing.
Well, I mean, our rural counties have different struggles. Every region is, you know, nobody is knowingly saying, "Oh, I'm not going to support." You know, it's not an intentional thing. You're doing the best that you can. It's interesting because those different strategies, they have different outcomes sometimes, and we learn something even from that. And you have to be willing to try some things that are out of the box to be able to find something that works better sometimes, too.
She said it, out of the box, so we have to take a break. Sue Kane is our special guest from the Northwest Educational Service District. I'm Michael Knight. This is The Agenda, 1246 at KPQ.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
Spread your wings and see the world through travel detective Peter.
Promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
It's 12:52. This is News Radio 560 KPQ. My special guest is Sue Kane from the Northwest Educational Service District. Well, we got smarter in the hour that you were here, Sue. What did we learn?
We learned how to meet a scientist, I think. There's a couple opportunities that your listeners are absolutely welcome to attend, and actually they could probably meet a few scientists in the room.
That'd be nice.
These are Wednesdays at 4 o'clock, from 4 to 5 o'clock. And the one, Dr. Roll and the opioid talk, is tomorrow. It's at the WSU Tree Fruit Research Extension that's on Western Avenue in Wenatchee. And then the EPA scientist that I mentioned, he's going to be speaking at Wenatchee Valley College on the 14th from 4 to 5 o'clock.
And are these on your website by chance?
These are on the website, yep.
What's the address?
Yeah. And what's
the website?
Oh, NCESD. Has them under the STEM. You can also just search Science in Our Valley, and that the series will pop up there as well.
Fabulous. I want to meet a scientist.
You should come.
I may get a little smarter, but it'd be such small increments you'd probably hardly notice.
Hey.
Sue Kane from the Northwest Educational Service District. Come back soon.
Hey, I will. Thank you.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ.